Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Moraz. Today, our guest is Morehead State University President, Dr. Wayne Andrews, resplendent today in a red turtleneck. And I'm going to ask you, first of all, is this to celebrate last night's win over Austin Peay or to celebrate the fact that the Reds have started spring training, or maybe both?
Well, all of those, plus today's Valentine's Day, isn't it, Chuck?
Every day is Valentine's Day, isn't
No, that was last week.
That was last week. I couldn't afford another one.
I just looked in the closet this morning. This red turtleneck jumped right out at me, and I grabbed it.
Well, it's a good look for
you. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something. I had a chance here recently, and I had House Speaker Rocky Atkins on my program. We were talking a little bit about the budget work, and I asked him about the planned 2% cut for 2.5% cut for higher education that was in the governor's budget. And he said that, he told me, he said, I'm disappointed about that. And he said, we're going to see what we can do maybe to rework that. Has he talked to you about that at all? Or?
He has. You know, we have such a great supporter and advocate for higher ed in Rocky Adkins. He has. The leadership in the House seems pretty unified. They'd like to roll that back. I've had conversations with four of the five leaders in the House. The chair of the House A&R Budget Committee, the chair of the House Education Subcommittee for Higher Ed, and a number of other of our representatives, and a few of the senators at this point, and there seems to be a general feeling they want to roll it back.
Did they give you any idea on how much they wanted to roll it back?
Not really. I mean, it's a work in progress. You know, they were pouring through the budget to see where money had been moved, how the governor had constructed the budget, where the flexibility was, and you know, the total cost to roll that back, as I remember, was $23 or $24 million for all of higher education. So, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not a huge amount of money when you think about a $10 billion budget. So, you know, they're overall looking at trying to find some places there.
Are you optimistic then?
Yeah, I am. I don't want to be overly optimistic because they've got a lot of pressure. They're not going to have new revenue to work with. They've got some structural imbalance to deal with. But there seems to be a genuine interest in finding a way to do it.
One thing that, and you've seen the articles, I'm sure, in, say, the Lexington Herald Leader, and I know it's been in other news sources, too, as well. They talked about the $310 million renovation to Rupp Arena. I know there was one state representative whose name escapes me right now and says, hey, you know what? If we're going to spend as a state, and I think the state's contribution is somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 million, we're going to spend that kind of money, maybe we should be putting it into higher ed. And I just kind of wondered where your thoughts were on all that.
Well, you know, as a higher education leader, of course, my job is to advocate for the work that we do. And I would simply say to our listening audience and the people that are interested and concerned that higher education isn't a problem. It's a solution to many problems that we face as a commonwealth. And so our job is to create a sense of hope and opportunity for young men and women that want to advance their lives. There's a recent Pew study out that shows the difference in earning power between a high school graduate and a baccalaureate graduate, and it's using the millennial generation, you know, the young generation that's in the workforce right now, age 23 to 34, I think was the age bracket, if I remember correctly. $17,000 difference in earning power between a kid in the workforce right out of high school in that age group and one that has a baccalaureate degree. And even during the recession with the big downturn and all the layoffs, the baccalaureate holders were in the workforce at much higher rates than those with high school only. They were the ones laid off in big numbers. So we know the power of earning a college degree, and so I'm going to advocate for it. Now, back to your question directly, there are lots of priorities in the budget, and you know, it's not my job to help dictate those priorities. It's simply to advocate for what we need. And you know, I assume that the renovation of Rupp Arena for Lexington and Fayette County and the Commonwealth generally is going to be a positive thing. It's an economic engine. So putting all those pieces together is why we send these bright men and women to Frankfort to figure all that out.
When I had a chance to talk to Representative Atkins, I said the one thing about the continuing cuts to higher education that bothers me is the fact that we're telling all these people that we're putting an emphasis on improving education in K through 12 with the goal that these people get into higher ed, but then at the same time, when you continue to cut higher ed, which forces tuition hikes, you're moving the goal line away from these people.
Well, that's true. In fact, you know, the governor met with the presidents of the universities a week before his budget address, and he told us that it was going to be a difficult budget, that there were many state agencies were going to take cuts, that higher ed was going to get a cut, but it wouldn't be as severe as the others, and he didn't tell us what the numbers were at that point. It turns out, you know, a number of agencies took a 5% cut, and we received a 2.5% cut. But in that conversation, the governor mentioned to us that, you know, while he said, you won't like this, he said, you do have tuition flexibility. And after a while, when we talked about it, I simply asked a question and made some comments about that. We do have tuition flexibility, but all we're doing there is shifting the burden, the tax, to the student. I mean, that's really what it is. When we increase tuition, we're taxing the students. And I don't apologize for raising tuition. We've had to raise tuition. I mean, I can review the budget numbers since 2008 if you want. But the bottom line is we've taken some serious cuts, and we've had increased rising fixed and unavoidable costs in that period from 08 to the present time of about $32 million. And the tuition increases we've had, 27% in that time period, have raised about $24 million. So the math is really simple. You know, the math is very simple. We're in the hole $8 million, $8.1 million to be exact, and that's a deep hole to be digging out of. Now, we've been able to, you know, to do things. We've saved money. We have a conservative budget group at the university, unlike the conventional wisdom in some places that we have, you know, money to spare, and we're not very careful. We're extremely careful how we use our money. But some of the money that we use is one-time money. You know, it's not money you can use for salaries and things of that nature. So the whole idea that the governor said you've got tuition flexibility, yeah, we have a little bit of that. A tuition dollar is worth 70 cents. A general fund dollar is worth a dollar. And I said that to our faculty and staff at convocation. Why is that? A tuition dollar, we plow back 30 cents of that $1 into scholarships and student support services and things like that. So we charge the students a buck increase for tuition somewhere along the way, but we're only going to net 70 cents to put back into the enterprise itself, whereas if we get a general fund dollar, it's 100 pennies, and we get all 100 of them. So that's part of the budget gap problem. So the long and the short of it is higher education needs to be a priority because it changes people's lives, it puts people on a better economic platform, and it launches people into the future. Representative Adkins understands that. He's been a strong advocate for us, as has the rest of our delegation, John Will Stacey and others. I mean, and they're solidly behind trying to find additional money for higher ed.
And you know this, there's been criticism, and a lot of it from people at the state level, whether they be representatives or senators or people in other areas of state government, who've criticized Kentucky's post-secondary institutions for raising tuition. At the same time, though, they're cutting the appropriation. And I think the criticism has been unfair because they've kind of put you between a rock and a hard place, essentially.
Well, I absolutely agree with your assessment there. It's tiring to me to be a higher education official and to do my best to lead an institution, to be appropriately conservative and yet have a progressive agenda for our place, and then to have people say that, you know, we can manage with less money, businesses have to do it and the like. So I testified last week before the House Education Subcommittee on Higher Education, and the way I approached the work, I had 15 minutes, and the way I approached it was to say to the committee, I want you to think about Morehead State University as a small city. We've got 1,700 acres of property. We have 11,200 students. We've got 6 miles of roads that we maintain by ourselves. We have our own water plant that produces 120 million gallons of water a year. We have 150 academic programs. So I went through a list of things to try to characterize for them in a greater sense what the nature of our work is. I mean, we have 500 buildings, and they have to be maintained. We haven't had maintenance and operating money on any new buildings in the last two biennial budgets. We've added 200,000 square feet of space to this university, and we've been given no additional money to maintain it, to clean it, to pay the utilities or anything else. We've had to reallocate that internally. And I said to that group, these are state buildings. They don't belong to the city of Moorhead. They don't belong to Wayne Andrews. They belong to the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And when you send your children here, you want our buildings to be clean, to be fresh, to be functional. And there are no Taj Mahals on campus. You know, I always say to them, come see. I'll be glad to give you the tour, show you what we've done. And so there's a fundamental disconnect in the minds of some people about what our business is.
Is that because they don't come in and do what you just said, maybe just tour a campus, whether it's Moorhead State or, say, Murray or Eastern, and just kind of take a look at things and how they are?
That may be part of it, Chuck, and part of it, you know, maybe what they read in the newspaper about how some of higher education works and where the money in higher education goes and the salaries that we pay administrators and coaches. I mean, you know, you read the newspaper, and you're a broadcast journalist yourself, so, I mean, you know where the stuff comes from, and so people interpret that at some level. And I always say to people, come to campus. Let me give you the tour. The books are open. There's nothing about how we run this place that's private. Everything we do, we're a public institution. Our budget's online. I mean, everything you want to know about the place is there. So, but it requires some analysis, right? It requires somebody really taking the time to get to know rather than making superficial judgments. So, for example, I said to that group, we have 3,000 beds in residence halls right now on campus. The second year I was here, we brought in an independent consultant to look at all of our housing stock. They interviewed over 1,000 students, prospective students, and parents. They told us what kind of housing they wanted for their children or the students wanted for themselves. We evaluated all that stock, and we've embarked on an ambitious plan to renovate all of our housing. At the end of this semester, we will have renovated 6 residence halls and spent $28 million. Not of state money, not one dime of that is money provided by the Commonwealth of Kentucky. The revenue necessary to do that, to pay the debt service on those renovations, comes from the students in the form of rent they pay to live in residence halls. And there's nothing ostentatious about what we've done. We've taken halls built in the 60s and brought them up to a modern standard. They look good. They work well. The students appreciate it. To me, that's an example of being a good steward, something we should do. And I can give many more examples of things we've done here to be good stewards, but it takes money, it takes leadership, it takes management, it takes an understanding of how to run something to accomplish that.
Speaking of dorm renovations, the work on Manon Hall continues, and what's the update there?
It's on schedule. That hall will be open this summer, certainly by fall, but if you've driven by the Manon complex, you can see what we've done there. You know, those were some of the well, ugly might not be the right word, but they certainly weren't very attractive with the precast concrete pebble finish panels on them. So in the course of doing renovations, of course, all the windows have been replaced. All the central systems have been updated, heat, air conditioning, electrical services, new roofs. And while we were doing it, I said, is it possible to take all that old pebble stuff off there and put brick on it so the buildings look like the traditional campus? And if you pass by there now, with the exception of the tower, which we just couldn't do, it really looks good. And we're creating a whole new patio on the inside of the complex so that it'll have a much better community feel. I think the cars will come out of there inside. There weren't many parking places there anyway. And there'll be a really nice area for students to gather and to do things. So it's an example of taking care of our business.
Well, and you mentioned the brick on the outside, and the reason I asked about the project in general, because everyone knows what kind of winter we've had here. It's been cold, it's been snowy, it's been wet, it's been miserable, and these guys have worked right through all that stuff.
Well, they have. I admire the contractor and the crews. Their goal was to have all that exterior brick work done in December, and I think they came close to making the goal, but boy, it's been a really tough winter to work outside. They've had some delays, but not too many weather days.
I guess the next step is to move to Cartmel, is that right?
Well, the next step in the budget that the governor presented are projects that will benefit our university. Some of those are agency-related projects, meaning that we will provide the money. Again, not the state doesn't give us a dime. They just give us authorization. We're going to build 600 new beds on campus just south of the new Recreation and Wellness Center in the area where Regents and Wilson Hall were. The reason we're doing that is that we're going to tear down Waterfield Hall, 400 beds in Waterfield. Eventually, we'll take down Butler and Alumni. Normal Hall, excuse me. No, Alumni is not going anywhere. So we need the capacity. Now, what's important in that statement is we're not trying to add more beds to the existing stock. We're going to have a net number of beds of about 3,000 beds, which we believe is the right number. So I know there's a little anxiety in the community because people are investing in housing in the community. What we're doing should not impede that at all. What we're doing is making sure the stock we have on campus is appropriate. I mean, Waterfield Hall was a stopgap for us. We needed the beds. There are 400 beds in there. We're using them. But if you look at Butler and you look at Normal, you can say, you know, they're just not appropriate. They need to come down.
So this is about having a nicer space for students.
It is indeed. And it's all about what amenities our students want and desire. And if we're going to be competitive in the world in which we play, we need to have that.
Again, our guest today on the front page, Morehead State University President Dr. Wayne Andrews. We'll have more on the show right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from the Community Recycling Center in Morehead. Located at 325 Triplett Street near the Morehead City Park, the Community Recycling Center offers a 24-hour drop-off service for a variety of recyclables, including cardboard, aluminum and steel cans, one and two numbered plastics, glass bottles and jars, books, newspapers, magazines, and mixed and shredded paper. The Community Recycling Center is a partnership of the City of Morehead, Rowan County, and Morehead State University. More information at 784-1250.
Welcome back to Front Page. Morehead State University President Dr. Wayne Andrews joins us today. I'm Chuck Meraz. And Dr. Andrews, I had the chance to talk to Mayor David Perkins last week from the city of Morehead. He said that he's met with you, and there's the possibility at some point in time, and this is what the discussion has been, regarding a public safety building that would be sort of a combined city-university-type project.
Yeah, we had the mayor had some comments at one of the city commission meetings that I noticed in the minutes, and that they need to build a new police station, fire combination, public safety building. So I sent him a letter and said, you know, this is something we ought to talk about. So very preliminarily, but my thinking is anytime you can have a partnership and combine resources, it's probably a winner. At least it's a winner to talk about it. And so we've just now begun that discussion. For us at the university, of course, if we were to do that, it would have to be close into the university. And then for the city, it would have to be located sort of centrally for them. So the question, really, there are two levels of questions here. One is, do the folks at the university and the city believe it's a good idea? And at that point in the discussion, I think you have to get down to the level of the people doing the work, the police officers and others. I mean, could it be worked out? And then secondly, is there a location we could identify that's doable that would accommodate? I didn't even know how much space would be required, but I'm a proponent of partnerships. I think if we're able to do something like that, there have to be ways that we could help manage more effectively. I mean, we have, while our functions may be different in some ways, we're still police organizations or fire organization. All of our police offices are fully certified through the Commonwealth of Kentucky, just like the public safety officers in the city, the same training. And then we have mutual response agreements. You know, we wouldn't be doing each other's work. But things like dispatch, for example, and things of that nature, it seems to me, at least on a very broad level, that those could be areas that where we might have some combined effort. And so we're just beginning to talk about that. But I'm hopeful that if it's deemed a good idea, that we might find a way to make it happen.
I guess when you talk about the main question right now is just trying to figure out a location for such a facility, and the other question I guess you would have is funding it.
Right. And we're going to have to do something different anyway, because in the master plan, the current location for our university police station, which is in Laughlin, goes away. So we know we're going to have to relocate our police organization down the road. And the city has already said they've got to relocate theirs too. They just need something that's more modern and in a combined police and fire location. So I think we're both faced with it. I mean, we have some resources available, some bonding power available. The city likely has the same. So, I mean, could we leverage the resources of both organizations and do something would be a question.
I had a chance to talk to someone here on campus, and they mentioned something to me I was hoping you'd respond to. They mentioned that retention might be down just a little bit. And obviously, we're getting a better grade of freshman students coming in, first-time freshmen, in terms of the ACT scores. And I'm just kind of curious what's going on there and how do we fix that problem, if it is a problem.
Well, you know, if you look at retention at the university in the last 10 years, and we've looked at it very carefully, our provost, Gerald DeMoss, and Jill Ratliff in institutional research, and Clorinda Phillips and academic programming, they've really drilled into the data. And what's interesting about it, there's no one obvious compelling reason why this is what it is. And what you see over 10 years is it's kind of a sawtooth chart. You know, we peaked, for example, 3 years ago, retention, first-time, full-time student retention was 73%. We were really excited about that. The next year, it dropped to 68. And so that's been our history. You know, it's 66, 67, 68, 70, 69, 73, 67. This year, it's about 67. So we have to figure that out. My assessment is it's a multiplicity of factors. You know, we know it's not students flunking out of school. We know that. We know that a large number of the students that leave, they leave here and they go to the community college. So that might cause one to think that it's financially related. You know, you can go to the community college, half the cost of the university, maybe. It could have to do with inability to get a schedule here, maybe in a particular program. It could have to do with a student maybe not maintaining the grades to keep a scholarship, still academically eligible, maybe losing a scholarship. And then we know our kids in this part of the country have deep family connections. I mean, I see these on occasion where a student has to go home because a parent is sick or a grandparent needs help, that type of thing. So I think it's a whole range of things. We're doing some things to address this. This next year, well, actually beginning next month in March, we're going to have a new advisement model where each of the colleges will have two central advisors. The central advisors will advise the undeclared students for the first 2 years and the students in the major that are declared for the first 2 years. So the goal here is to make sure that every incoming student in a program or an undeclared student has an advisor that is really well equipped with the details of the university's processes and the like to help get them started properly. It'll be a close relationship with our faculty because ultimately the faculty are the key to academic advisement. They're the ones that know about the programs and the career opportunities and the like. And then there'll be a direct handoff then going into the junior year when the students are, you know, storming into the major, where the faculty will pick them up directly and see them on through to graduation. So, our provost and our deans have worked this through. We've provided the funding for it. We'll be ready to go with SOAR sessions beginning in March. And we're enthusiastic about it. That's a piece of this retention puzzle, we think. And we'll just have to track it and see what kind of an impact that makes.
You've got a Board of Regents retreat coming up.
We do.
I guess the key question is, the key question is, what's for lunch?
Well, probably sandwiches, I think. Carol Johnson told me, I think a soup and sandwich bar or something like that.
Well, what happens at these retreats? People wonder, they see maybe a note in the paper or something like that or hear us talk about it on the air. What goes on?
Well, a normal board meeting, a quarterly board meeting, is very structured. You know, we have review of personnel actions. We have review of new academic programs. I mean, it's a fairly routinized list of actions that are taking. For the last 5 or 6 years, I guess, maybe 7 years, I don't know, time flies when you're having fun, we've tried to have a retreat on an annual basis that's designed simply around planning things. So for tomorrow, for example, the heart of what we're going to talk about is the new campus master plan and the associated things related to that. What are the priorities in the plan from our point of view? What are the financial commitments that we'd have to make? What are the sequencing activities that will have to occur to bring the board up to speed on what is involved in all that?
Well, Dr. Andrews, as always, it's gone by quickly, and we appreciate your time.
Well, Chuck, it's a pleasure, and I want our listening audience to know that this afternoon you and your wife, Joni, are headed to Frankfurt, and you're going to be recognized on the floor of the Kentucky General Assembly in the House by Representative Rocky Atkins for your 25 years of service as the voice of the Eagles.
Well, thanks so much for mentioning that. Generally, that type of recognition only happens at police stations.
Well, thankfully, there's no mugshot. You'll probably get a nice resolution signed by the Speaker and the House Majority Leader. But congratulations and thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Andrews. Our guest today again, Dr. Wayne Andrews, President, Morehead State University. I'm Chuck Morales, host of Front Page. See you next time.